What's up? This is Tony from Municipal Waste, and you're listening to Toilet of Hell.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
You are listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show. Today we've got a very special guest, Tony Foresta of Iron Reagan and Municipal Waste. Tony, how are you doing today?
Great, how you doing?
Good, man. You're currently driving through the middle of nowhere. Can you give us an idea of where geographically the middle of nowhere is?
Right now, I think we're about 45 minutes away from Mount Rushmore.
That is...
And we're stopping at Mount Rushmore. I think right now we're in South Dakota. I'm not sure. I just woke up. I have no idea where I am right now.
You could be in someone's basement.
Somebody said we're near Mount Rushmore, and we're going to go get a picture taken in front of it.
Hell yeah. I think South Dakota is about as close to the middle of nowhere as geographically gets, so you nailed it.
I've never, in all the years that I've toured, I've never driven through this part of the country, so it's kind of cool.
That's rad. What's your next destination?
We go to Seattle to start the Warp Tour. We're actually going to go, we have to get there a day early for like a practice day. I've never been on a tour and done this before, but yeah, we go out and I guess we're practicing, like setting up our equipment and learning how the tour works. I think there's like 100 bands on the tour or something. I guess they have a day where you show up actually a day early to the show and you kind of set up all your stuff, and there's a kind of a protocol that goes to how the thing is organized, and to kind of explain it to all the people in the band. How it works.
Did you ever in your entire life think that you would end up playing the Warped Tour?
I would say when I was a kid, I was pretty blown away. I remember the first Warped Tour when it came through Florida, and it was like L7 and Seaweed, I think, and Face to Face, or can't remember. I remember Quicksand was playing as well. But yeah, I remember those early Warped Tours. The lineups were super amazing, which I'm glad like this year they kind of got some more older.
Yeah, we were going through the lineup a couple of days ago. It's like, wow, this is a legitimately great tour now. Like, there's enough stuff for older dudes here. Like, yeah, I want to go get in the pit with the kids now.
Right. So, yeah, I would say that in the past years, I wouldn't expect myself to be on Warped Tour. After I wasn't really vibing with the lineups, but when they told us what it was going to be like this year, and they said they were kind of bringing it back to the older style and, you know, mixing it with what they've been doing, and I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah, we decided to be a part of it.
when you're not playing, are you going to be just watching Guar and Sick of It All and Candiria all day, or do you think you're going to migrate towards hanging out with bands like Bowling for Soup and Hawthorne Heights?
I don't know. I never heard of those two last two bands.
You're not missing anything.
I'm definitely gonna like check out some of the other bands, but I'm sure it's got like weird bass drops in every time and people rapping over guitar stuff. I'm gonna be a little weird and probably like it. But you know, I'm gonna take it all in. You know, I'm excited to, and also like I'm probably gonna be watching more like, you know, TSOL and Sick of It All and stuff like that. But like, it's a 2 month long tour, so I'm definitely going to be wandering around and checking out stuff that I normally wouldn't see. I'm definitely going to watch Hatebreed every day, though.
Hell yes. So you're a road dog. I mean, between your two bands, you're constantly touring. How do you stay alive on the road? How do you stay sane?
I try to sleep a lot. That's cool. I just had a few months home, like without touring. Iron Reagan just did a tour with Power Trip and had a little bit of time. I wanted to take a few months off before this tour, and so I ended up just, I don't know, like you got to recharge your batteries every once in a while, you know. So I'm just coming off of that, and And I'm excited to get back on the road again. You know, you don't want to, you start feeling burnt out. Sometimes you got to hit the brakes a little bit, which is also why, you know, it took Miss Waste 5 years to write a new album, you know. So, you know, sometimes you got to pump the brakes if it gets a little crazy.
I think I read an interview you did with, maybe it was Invisible Oranges. You were talking about the break in between the records and kind of recording new things. There, correct me if I'm wrong here, was there kind of a discarded Municipal Waste record between Fatal Feast and Slime and Punishment?
I don't think it was an entire record. There was a lot of songs written with lyrics that are actually like recorded like very poorly. Like, you know, in our practice space and just, you know, but yeah, we actually had a lot of songs, but we just didn't like them that much. You know, we weren't really too into it. I don't know if it was an entire album's worth of material, but we like to call it like the record we scrapped, you know, but like there's a, you know, we used the best elements from those songs that we had and kind of just reworked them all. Not all of the songs, but, a little bit, you know, enough to get what we wanted out of it. And, you know, sometimes, you know, like you just got to start over. We added a new member. So that kind of like, it was also part of the transition of, well, since we're getting Nick, we shouldn't have to teach him these songs that we're not even super confident in. So it was better to just kind of like, fuck it. We'll just take what we like and then move on. And just, it was even, it's probably quicker to just write better songs than to teach Nick the songs that we weren't really super confident in. You know what I mean? So we just decided to just fuck it and just start over. And I think it made the record way better. I like it a lot. So
yeah, I got
how it came out.
I got a chance to listen to the promo copy as well. It's a really, really sick record. Any chance that you might release some of those scratch tracks for the diehard fans in the future?
Well, the thing is with those is that they're not, it's like, I don't even think, maybe not, probably not. Who knows? We have so much shit. Like, I think every record, even like Art of Partying had like songs that came out. We would have to go through and find all that shit. Who knows where that is, but yeah, it's tough, man. So yeah, but I don't know if that would ever see the light of day, any of that shit. Maybe one day we'll leak those shitty demos just for fun, but who knows.
You could try to release them under confident. A different band name and see if another label will pick up on it.
I mean, it's so poor. It's almost like garage band recordings, you know?
I think there's probably a market for that. If you put it under a different name with a super shitty sound quality, you know, there's a number of underground blogs that are going to pick it up like, oh, it's way better than those Posers and Municipal Waste.
Yeah, that's actually kind of funny. I'm going to steal your idea.
Well, let us premiere the tracks first, and then you can steal the idea.
Yeah. So, how did you get hooked up with Nick, with your new guitar player?
Oh, we've been, I think we've been hanging out with Nick for, shit, man, well over 10 years. He was in Cannabis Corpse with Phil, and, he plays in this band called Bat with Ryan, and, he was also in Vulture. So, I mean, we'd just known him, just hanging out, playing the music with him. I mean, I think when we talked about getting another guitar player, I think he was the only rational decision for us to have someone, because we like to have people that we want to hang out with as well as play music with, you know what I mean? So it's like having him in the band is a no-brainer, you know, because he's just a good friend of ours, first and foremost. And that's the best thing to have in a band. And he's also a ripper in guitar, so it's kind of inspiring it makes you want to go to band practice, and you know, having a new person around kind of puts a little bit of new energy in the band.
You kind of work and live around the same guys every day, you know, especially doing the project with Landfill with Iron Reagan. I mean, do you ever just get sick of each other?
No, I mean, not really. It's like family at this point, especially like me and Phil. We're really around each other every day almost. we'll hang out. We're not on tour. We watch pro wrestling every once in a while. Not really get sick of each other. You kind of know when you need to give someone their space. Sometimes people got like personal shit going on, and sometimes you just got to know when to lay back. You know, you can tell what buttons not to push when someone's having a bad day and stuff like that when you're just around somebody that much. I think everyone gets a little sick of everybody. Oh, you know, not just being in bands in general, it's just like being around people, but. There's never like blow-ups or weird fights. We just kind of like yell about some shit, and then like just start talking about something else. nobody really gets like worked up over shit. Yeah, we're having too much of a good time to really let stuff like that, you know, bother you.
So at this stage in the game, I mean, you put out two full lengths this year. With your two projects, which one's your baby? Iron Reagan or Municipal Waste?
Which one's my what?
Which one's your baby?
Oh, I mean, this one. I mean, they're both my babies. So I don't know. It's like having two kids.
Yeah, I always hear that. Yeah, you have to pick a favorite child.
Do you say that to a parent? Which one's your baby?
Yeah, I've always heard that they secretly have favorites.
Ask your parents that.
Yeah, they told me I'm not it.
I mean, it just depends on how I'm feeling and, you know, where I want to direct certain creative energy. So I don't know. They're both, you know, they're both just creative outlets that I love very much. So I don't know. It's neither one, you know. I mean, this thing's more like my teenage child at this point. This band's almost 15 years old. This band's going to get a driver's license next year. It's crazy.
So you tend to, your songwriting, it seems like you prefer writing, I guess, short stories with your Municipal Waste tracks. I heard a little bit about the backstory of Amateur Sketch. I've heard it's about posers. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I guess it's basically like posers. I also always wanted to have a song called Amateur Sketch because the Leprechaun in Mobile, Alabama. So it's about both of those things.
Who else in the Leprechaun say yeah?
Pretty much what that one's about.
So Municipal Waste also has a long history of referencing horror movies, specifically trauma movies. You know, the video for Headbanger Face Rip was done by Trauma Entertainment. What are some of your favorite trauma movies?
I was just talking about this the other day. I would say, strangely, I mean, of course, it's like Classic to Come High, but I really like Cannibal the Musical. Like, that's like my secret favorite trauma movie. Cause, I don't know. It was just such a weird movie when I saw it at the time. I was just like expecting this super gory trauma movie, and it would turn into be like a full on musical, which I was like, oh shit. Well, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, trauma is weird because you can get great stuff like Cannibal or Toxic Avenger or, you know, Return to Horror High, and then you also get stuff like a movie called Butt Crack.
Yeah. I have a ton of like weird, I can't think of any of the names of them now, but like more like their newer releases, like in the past 5 years, and it's they're still cranking them out, you know.
Yeah, I went to a trauma event that Lloyd Kaufman was there, like premiering some of the new movies. Like one of them was Father's Day. It's the same guys that went on to make The Void, so it was just like an incredible start for those guys, just hooking up with trauma.
Wait, I'm sorry. The guys that did The Void?
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen, it came out, I guess, about 6 months ago?
Yeah, no, I was just raving about that movie interview I did a couple days ago.
It's so good.
It's pretty funny.
But yeah, there's
the director, those guys did a trauma movie.
Yeah, it was called Father's Day, and it was about a guy that kills fathers kills and rapes fathers. Yeah, it's
awesome.
Surprisingly good. I highly recommend checking that one out.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah, I thought The Void was great. It was creative. It reminded me of like some older campy horror movie, and then it turns into like this weird Event Horizon type.
Oh yeah,
insanity.
There's definitely like the Lovecraft like elder gods in there. It's so sick.
Yeah. I was saying that's like one of my favorite horror movies I've seen in the past few years for sure.
If someone made the Municipal Waste the horror movie, what would you want it to be about?
That would be something like. Something that would take place at like Municipal High, and then it would like spill over into like, a bloodbath of some sort. Not like a Columbine type thing, but like a
giant beer can eating people bloodbath.
Yeah, it's something along those lines. It would be like, I would say, Meatballs mixed with like something. Mixed with like Dead Alive, set at Municipal High. So
yeah, I'd buy that DVD.
Something like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, there would be titties in it. There'd have to be titties in it. And, I mean, it might be dude titties. It might be lady titties. It might be anybody titties.
Equal opportunity titties.
That sounds like a new album.
There will. Mark my word, there will be titties.
I've got to ask, because I'm getting to the point where if I have four drinks in a night, I feel it for the next 2 days. Do you have any tips for beating a hangover?
Yeah, I've gotten pretty good at it. Make sure you sleep. Don't drink too much caffeine real late. Drink a shitload of water right before you go to bed. That is, if you're not the type of person that pees your pants a lot. Yeah, I always stay hydrated, and while you're out at night, drink water. If you're going bar hopping, have a water with your drink, especially if you're doing shots. Drink some goddamn water, you fucking dehydrated bastards.
It sounds like you have your Warped Tour speech all ready to preach about beer to the 16-year-olds that are going to be there.
Shit, I bring Pedialyte. Like, I have little packets of Pedialyte just in case. Like, if I know I'm really drunk, I'll put Pedialyte in a damn water and drink that right before I go to bed.
Man, that's
it works, man.
That's brilliant.
Like, that's if you're like, you know, if you drink like a lot. I know my shit, man. I've been doing this for a while.
I saw that you got to interview the mayor of Richmond recently. You know, do you have any plans?
Yeah.
How was that, by the way? Was that a cool experience?
It was great. It was great because not a lot of people know that guy's story, but he's only 35 years old. He's really young. He's very progressive, and he's smart. He's funny. He actually like is a part of the community. Like, he actually hangs out at local restaurants. I'll see him at bars. He's also very professional. He isn't like a rock star mayor or anything. So that's why I think he's kind of off the grid for a lot of people. They don't really realize him, but he's done a lot of good things for the city. He's honest, and he's a real good guy. And it's really nice to, I kind of thought it'd be a good idea. I was asked to do it. I thought it'd be a good idea to participate because I think more young people in Richmond need to be aware that it isn't a bunch of old white people that are trying to make a change in Richmond. It's like, there are people that you can vote for that are actually worth a shit. Yeah, I was honored. I thought it was a cool idea. And I think he's been so busy. He was working more with like older people, and he kind of wanted to work with me because he thinks that, they thought that, you know, it'd be nice to have him appeal to the younger crowd and have him like speak out to be more people, more younger people would pay attention to it, you know, if we work together. And I think that's smart. I think more people need to do that.
That's rad. Yeah. I mean, Any chance that you could write maybe an anthem for the next Bernie Sanders type to come around?
Nah, they wouldn't want that. I can't sing too good. they want someone to sing for that. You got to get a vocalist.
You call it massive progression.
Well, I'm a vocalist. See, I guess you need a singer. I'm a vocalist. You need a singer for that job.
Well, in keeping with the politics thing, I don't think there's a metal show I go to now where I don't see the municipal waste, the only walls we build are walls of death t-shirt. How did that come about?
Well, it was originally like a one-off shoot thing that we were going to do when we were playing a show in L.A. We weren't really playing a lot of municipal waste shows, but we had a gig out there, and the only thing he was talking about was like the wall. He had to build the wall, but he was the president. He was going to build the wall, get, you know, like talk to shit on Mexico and all this shit. And, you know, playing in LA, there's a lot of punks from down there, you know, and it's like, it's offensive, you know. We just want to let everyone know that we weren't about all that bullshit, that hatred. So we made these shirts, and we only made 50 for the show, and they sold out before the doors were even open. People were like just coming in. They're like, "Can I just get in and buy a shirt real quick?" Yeah, so it was crazy. And then, but we weren't really playing shows, so we didn't really do anything with it. And then it got online to sell, and then a rumor came out that, you know, Trump was suing us, which was a false rumor, but it made the shirt's popularity explode. So yeah, it was crazy. And then, you know, next thing I know, Kathy Griffin's talking about it, and a year later, and that dickhead's president, and he's fucking pissing off everyone in Europe. And, you know, yeah, that's how it's going. It's a weird world to live in. I don't know what's going to happen next. Me and Ellen DeGeneres are going to start beefing or something. I don't know.
The sky's the limit.
Yeah, the sky's the limit.
Anything else you want to tell us about Slime and Punishment? Comes out June 23rd on Nuclear Blast. What can fans expect?
June 23rd. Yeah, we're pumped about it. We're fucking trying to work our way to play as many shows as possible this summer. And yeah, the record rules. We're really proud of it. We worked our butts off on it. 5 years, goddammit. Hopefully y'all like it.
Can verify it's a good record. Go pick it up. And if there's any left, you can also pre-order a limited edition package with a lunchbox that has the album artwork.
Yeah, if you go to the Nuclear Blast website, that's our label. Yeah, they have a bunch of different shit, like the lunchbox version, who knows what other stuff they have, but the lunchbox came out crazy. And they also have like different color vinyl and cool shit like that. So yeah, check it out. Pre-order that shit.
Hell yeah. Your skin is covered with red skin's eyes. Your mouth is flooded with this in a thing. You spend your days trying to impress our concern of people who couldn't care less. We'll be in the story. Your eyes were smaller than the damn soul. Did you hear the plaudits? Repeat offender. Nobody's listening. Return to sender. And behind your back, we're off in your face. And you're just about to get put in your place. Use the more time looking at your reflection and doing all the things you endlessly mentioned. Persona, absurd. Amateur.
It's fading fast. The rest will turn to dust. Your strong sense of its character acting while intimidation's a main thing you're lacking. Persona.
You were listening to the Toilet of Hell podcast, and love is dead because Ivan Moody might be leaving Five Finger Death Punch. How are you guys doing?
Oh, well, now I'm heartbroken because of you.
Yeah, man.
You can't just drop a bomb like that on us.
Well, you start on a down note and then you work your way back up.
Good Lord, we've got an uphill battle.
This is the Empire Strikes Back of episodes.
There is like a finger of Death Punch for every time Ivan Moody has left that band.
I woke up this morning and Lasser Tillion was like, do we have anything to run in the 11 o'clock spot today? I was like, oh, I forgot. So I wrote a post today in roughly 15 minutes about possible replacements for Ivan Moody in the band.
Oh, yeah, you're going to talk about your good buddy Phil?
Well, the thing is, nobody can quite match Ivan Moody except for Phil Labonte, because they both look like baby men.
Just like over-muscled baby men trying to compensate.
It's like, you know, it's like a toddler. Like, their hair hasn't grown in, and they're just, like, weirdly juiced on Monster Energy.
Yeah, that's the thing with short guys. If they can't grow up, they have to grow out. It's just the only option that they have.
Yeah, and then you gotta buy guns, like, to additionally tack onto that.
Yeah, you can shoot the gun as high up as you want.
Yep.
I just like that he's become, like, the go-to rebound vocalist for bands that lose theirs. It happened once with Killswitch Engage.
That's right,
And now with Five Finger Death Punch, and he's like good enough to like, hey, help us out, we're in trouble, but nah, we don't want you to join.
Well, I'm just saying that my pick, one of the suggestions I made, is the only thing better than Phil Labonte is Toby Keith. I think Toby Keith could be way more jingoistic than even Ivan Moody. It would take them to a new stratosphere of sales. You know, like if you join the military, they give you their discography.
I think Phil Anselmo should do it.
Man, you're not the first person to suggest that to me. And I will say this, like, without a shred of irony, I don't think he has the voice for it, which is saying something. His voice is shot, man.
He doesn't have the voice for a lot of things. It's true. When I actually met him at Rock and Shock, he's just the actual voice that he talks with is so ridiculously bullfroggy. He's just like, oh, you're a big man, how you doing? And you can't understand a word he says unless he really tries, I think.
Did he call you brother?
Oh, yeah, probably no less than 7 or 8 times.
So he might be a professional wrestler.
Might be, yeah.
With his voice shot like that, it takes a lot of effort to get the racial slurs out.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have heard Scour. It's not the best, but it's about all he can do at this point.
I listened to the thing he did with Bill, whatever the fuck his name is.
Mosley
from House of a Thousand Corpses. The song about donuts or not having enough. It was one of the worst songs I've heard in the last several years.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. Well, should I check it out? Is it worth my time?
We might just play it on this show to make the listeners fucking deal with it.
just play it as the closer.
I found that with this show, I work really hard on a lot of episodes, and like we try our best to get good guests, and like, you know, we try our best to be funny and relevant, and nobody listens to those episodes. And the ones where I just can't hide my dripping disdain for the audience, those do pretty well. So I'm just going to go fully in that direction.
It's a valuable lesson to learn. You got to hate the people that love you the most in order to get ahead in this business. It's just how this works. I mean, you see how Metal Sucks operates. They only write to upset people.
That is factually true, yes. Actually, we do have a great guest on this program, so that might mean that we've already shot ourselves in the foot. Going to have Tony Foresta of Iron Reagan and Municipal Waste. And, you know, anybody that's ever seen my writing or heard me talk, they know that I'm a huge, huge, huge fanboy of those two bands. So, you know, make it to the midpoint and then see if I can keep it in my pants. Spoiler, don't.
You don't.
So I figure that, you know, to flip the script and actually talk about something, we should talk a little bit about the state of metal and how basically every person contributing to it is actually ruining it.
Yeah, it doesn't look too good, boys. It's pretty rough. The edges are frayed, and there's a crack in the neck, and the frets are all buzzed out, flattened. It's awful.
This old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be.
That's right.
At least so says people that ostensibly have been involved in this for a while. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with this this blog called Clairvoyant. Is that familiar to you?
I haven't heard of Clairvoyant, but I've heard of Clairvoyant.
I apologize. I was filling in the vowels for them. Clairvoyant is a blog that started up, I'm going to say, roughly a year ago. It kind of popped up. It did a premiere of several albums that I tried to premiere unsuccessfully. So out of nowhere, this thing immediately had some juice behind it. And, you know, I did a little bit of reading into it. It was founded by, let's see, the managing editor is Fred Pissarro, who's previously worked with Noisy and like Invisible Oranges and Pitchfork. And, you know, looking at this thing, because it looked really good, it still looks pretty good. You could tell that there was serious money behind this thing. So in the years since they've launched, like, you know, it can be tough out there. There's a really crowded media market for metal news. They've kind of struggled, and I would say that kind of struggled is kind of an understatement, considering that Toilet of Hell is an actual competitor with them in terms of traffic, and we don't spend any money. So I think they finally found a niche, though, in running aggrieved op-eds about how metal is not good.
Well, they had to do something.
You know, it's I guess it's working for them, because in my Twitter feed, my Facebook feed, I'm seeing Clairvoyant everywhere because people are sharing these posts. I mean, they're also saying, like, this is fucking stupid, but they're sharing them, which is all that matters. It started out 3 weeks ago with a piece by David Hall. You know, the title of this is The Director of Maryland Death Fest, the Movie, Metal is the Fucking Worst. That director would be David Hall. He used to have a label called Handshake Incorporated, which had bands like Pieron and Gridlink and a number of other really cool ones. They shut down, I think, similarly about 2 years ago as well. But he wrote this piece. And I wanted to like this because it started off so strong.
Oh yeah. It's, I don't want to read too much, 'cause we kind of had a great time reading articles last time, but, he spends the first half of this article making me fall in love with every stupid thing he has to say. It's just beautiful. Just to give you an idea, the very first paragraph is there any other genre of music that is so self-absorbed, so desperate for validation, so pathetically obsessed with itself, so childish and image-conscious, so accepting of conformity and mediocrity as metal? No, there isn't, because metal is the fucking worst, at least in North America, and it needs to get right or go away forever.
And that's great, because, I mean, yeah, that's the kind of thing that we talk about constantly. There are so many tryhards and I hate to say that, posers, following, just follow the same template as bands that came before them. And it's just, there's a gray goo of metal and bands that aren't, like, willing to try something new.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the article is kind of in this vein where he just takes apart heavy metal as an attitude, as a concept, and all of its listeners, and all of these shitlords that we've been hearing from over and over again. But then he goes on for the remainder of the article to prove that he's exactly the kind of gatekeeping, self-absorbed, overthinking shitlord that he spends the first half of the article calling out. Pretty much, I think it's maybe at the two-thirds point, he just makes this really ridiculous statement that heavy metal died. And the moment it died is when Sunbather was released by Deaf Heaven in 2013. Like, that is the moment where heavy metal was put in the fucking grave.
It's pulling off the mask and Scooby-Doo to reveal you were the poser all along.
Right. It's like you were the good guy at the beginning of the episode, but since you weren't in the gang, you had to be the ghoul, you know?
Old man, no fun club. it's so funny. Like, even in this day, what is it, 4 years after Sunbather was released, still flogging that dead horse. Like, this is bad. God. You shouldn't like this. I mean.
And he goes on to cite the Ray-Ban commercial. And there are a ton of rebuttals to this article for some obvious reasons, because it's absolute nonsense. But everybody seems to kind of agree with him on this point. They're like, well, yeah, we get it. The Ray-Ban commercial was just that's over the line. We can't have that. And it wasn't a Ray-Ban commercial so much. It was kind of like just a documentary that kind of just talked about Deaf Heaven for a bit. And it was sponsored by Ray-Ban.
Yeah, they also did like this weird profile thing that I wrote about because it was super cringeworthy.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, also, Deaf Heaven, like, got to be the needle in a haystack that got to make money making fucking metal. Like, how lucky can you be? So,
right.
Begrudging their success for, like, taking some fucking trendy sunglass maker for a little bit of money, like, I got no grudge with them for that.
And I mean, I don't know how far Deaf Heaven have come financially since I last saw this interview they did with, I believe it was Noisy, where the guy goes into their apartment to kind of see how Deaf Heaven lives. And these dudes are not millionaires. Like, Carey McCoy was living on a mattress, like, behind a sheet. Like, that's where that poor guy got to go and fuck his girlfriend with the rest of these dudes just hanging out, smoking weed or whatever they were doing. I mean, yeah, they were getting by on their music, which is a huge accomplishment in this day and age, but they were, like, just getting by. And there were metal bands making millions and millions of dollars in the 80s and 90s. Some of which being probably the ones that David Hall thinks are fucking true. So it makes no sense that people get on bands' cases for...
Not to get too far away from the initial point, but how much money do you think Celtic Frost made? Because it's got to be way more than like any other band of this era.
Yes, absolutely. Especially, what was it, Cold Water? Cold Lake, yeah. Sorry, my bad. That probably got him a couple K here and there.
Yeah, man, the best Celtic Frost record.
Must listen.
So, that's a thing, man. Like, I don't know if we want to dwell on this piece too much or move on with the next... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't understand the point of these articles that seem to be cropping up more and more as, you know, more of these websites also crop up. Like, why do people feel the need to talk about this general amorphous state of metal?
Yeah.
What does it accomplish? It's pretty much just navel-gazing at this point, isn't it?
I mean, and we're guilty of it too from time to time, of course, but, like, it's all navel-gazing. You're speculating, like, this thing that I love that I'm becoming less and less attached to is actually being ruined by these young kids.
Yeah, it kind of boggles the mind what these guys think metal really is. Like, what they just have this assumption of how metal kind of operates and thrives, and what defines the integrity of the genre. And when you look at some of the rebuttal pieces that people made, the rebuttals, they kind of point out the obvious stuff. Like, they say, well, Deaf Heaven didn't kill anything. Like, they just made an album. They're just a band. They didn't have some sort of, like, Machiavellian reasoning behind doing it. You know, they didn't go out of their way to try to, you know, eliminate what we love with their efforts. They're just a band from California who just wanted to make a cool record together, and that's all that happened, with no real commercial success in mind, I'm sure.
If you guys do want to start the band that, like, actually tries to ruin metal for everybody, let me know, because I'm totally into that.
I would love to have you guys involved in that project. It's been something I've been mulling over for a while. I've listened to a lot of pop music, grunge music, country music. I think I'm really onto something here.
Yeah, if you add if you somehow make country, rap, and metal come together, you'll just create the metal. It's the last thing.
All right, I got one brewing. Here we go. Let's see. Ba wit da ba da bang a bang.
Good lord. Diggy. Metal has been done since the 90s.
yes, absolutely.
But I digress. Where did we go?
Well, look, I guess we'll get back to the these articles here. I mean, Neil Jameson threw his hat in the ring because literally anytime anybody anywhere in a metal publication says anything or farts in the wrong direction, Neil Jameson has to say the F word 48 times and put it in an article.
Have either of you guys ever heard a single Krieg song in your life?
Nope. I have. I have not.
Is it any good?
They're not bad. I mean, as a guy who listens to black metal and performs black metal, it's not too typical. I guess it's a little doomier, a little more on the low end, but it's okay music. I don't really have anything bad to say about his band. But this guy's been at this forever. He's been doing this since like he was a kid back in the 90s. And if you like look up how long Krieg has been around, you'd be surprised at how they're still so unpopular.
he used to be in Noctemystium, right?
I don't know if he was in Noctemystium. I know that him and Blake Judd were in a band called Twilight together. That was a bit of a supergroup with members from Creed and Noctemystium that might have been the only two. I'm not too well versed on the subject.
Okay, well, I'll shut the hell up because apparently I know nothing.
No, it's okay. I mean, him and Blake Judd go way back, and Neil Jameson wrote this huge article about what a piece of shit that Blake Judd is and what a drug addict he is and how he deserved all the worst things in life. And then Metal Sucks quoted him directly, and then he wrote a rebuttal piece to how Metal Sucks, you know, oh, you paraphrased what I said. I never said that. But Neil Jameson goes into it, and he kind of says something about how Antifa is ruining metal because that's his thing now. He wants to be like Mr. Centrist, where he can say, hey, stop touching boobs at shows, but also Antifa is a bunch of fucking pussies and cucks or whatever.
We all love centrists.
That's right.
Love that piss warm middle ground.
That's right. And I actually, among all that, we're kind of behind the eight ball here. This has been going on since the beginning of June, at least. People have been kind of commenting on this David Hall piece, and everybody's kind of throwing their hat in the ring. I have some very strong opinions about where metal is, because it's not really anywhere, depending on who you are. What a lot of people don't seem to realize or be okay with is that you can be like a 16-year-old girl who just like sits on a laptop and throws like a metal song on Spotify, and then that can be your experience with metal. It can begin and end there, and it's totally fucking fine. The next song you can listen to can be like from the new Lord album. It just doesn't matter. Like, you don't have to absorb all the rest of this bullshit where it's like, oh, we have Nazi sleeper agents over here just trying to, you know, use really great vocabulary to, you know, be pseudo intellectuals about how metal is being ruined by posers. And we don't have to go into what band's doing what in the commercialization. It's just really at the end of the day, these aren't like representations of what's happening to the metal genre. It's just representations of what's happening to the metal genre for David Hall. It's like, this is just David Hall's experience with metal. He's just mad on the internet. Like we were talking about last week. He mad, man.
I mean,
maybe he was hungry and it was kind of like a hangry rant.
That's right. He probably just didn't have his biscuits.
We are low blood sugar.
Let's be real. We are all guilty of being mad online from time to time. The difference is that I don't write a 2,000-word piece about being mad and then ship it to another outlet.
Yes, you do. Don't you?
It's my own outlet.
I suppose that's true. That's what I'm doing now, and I love it. You know, I can just write a article every 6 months for you guys and then just sit back and the site still runs. It's the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, I deeply regret doing this every day. Anyway, Moving on with this, there were a number of pieces. There were backlashes within Clairvoyant. One of the staff writers wrote, "Metal is not the worst, you just don't get it," which kind of touched on some of those subjects. But getting back to Neil Jameson, he doesn't get it. And that he's been too involved with this for too long, where everything is live or die. And it's just not that way at all.
So, yeah, I think his personal perspective, like I was saying before, seriously skews where he considers the genre is or how you should act and everything else. I mean, one time, like the only interaction I had with Neil Jameson was a couple years ago. Vince Neilstein had wrote an article on Metal Sucks that was about how vinyl is kind of a lame duck. Like he doesn't really see the point in vinyl records and CDs and anything like that. He thinks, you know, Spotify is the future, digital files are the future, and all this shit just takes up space and it's just for novelty and so and so. And then Neil Jameson wrote this article just as with as many F words as possible. Once again, just saying how, you know, oh, good for you. You don't buy vinyl. That's great. Bands need you to buy vinyl. So there. And then because this was, I don't know, maybe it was a little before I realized that rebuttals on top of rebuttals are stupid, I wrote a rebuttal to both their articles where I said, well, vinyl and Spotify are stupid. And here's why. And I got into how, you know, Spotify pays you a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a penny for thousands of streams. And then I got into how vinyl is just a really great way for record companies to make profit off of bands trying to put their stuff on a format that they think people like. I said that I think Bandcamp is just the way to go. And I think Bandcamp is how we should always do things, just digital files that people can purchase. And then Neil Jameson, I don't know, somebody sent it to him and he was like, I refuse to acknowledge a person with a moniker that asinine. And he was referring to my name, Brenicide. He just made fun of the fact that my name was Brenicide. And this is a guy who a couple years ago called himself Lord Imperial. So I don't even
know. Well, how do you know he's not a lord? Maybe he was knighted.
Well, he went by Lord Imperial. Then he went by N Imperial. Then he went by N. And then he went by just Neil Jameson. And I think I called him like Lord Imperial Diddy Dog or something. And
I only answered to Lord Nefarious.
That's true. Yeah.
God, that's so silly. It's two sides of the same idiotic coin.
Like, that's right.
I like your nickname because I get it. It's fairly ironic. You know,
yeah.
It, going back to the MySpace days of like, what were people calling themselves back then? Like
a lot of X's.
Yeah,
X Tyler X kill you.
That's right.
I remember there was like, oh yeah, my ex girlfriend. She hated this chick that called herself Thrashly. I still think that was a cool name.
I one time went on a Plenty of Fish date with a girl who called herself Smashly.
That's badass.
I should have saw that coming, man. That was a rough date.
Oh. Tell us about it.
No, that's okay. All right, I'm going to tell you about it. So we went back to her place, and I got really drunk and really high. And she was trying to fool around a little bit, but because she was high, in order to not freak out, she had to have Pawn Stars on. She just had to have the TV on. And it's like, this girl's trying to fool around with me, but like Pawn Stars is on. So my like, you know, super stoned hypervision is focused on the screen. And it's just all I can see are like the old man's lips, just like all gooey and goopy, just talking
they're
about.
They're so moist.
They're so moist. And it's like, this girl's trying to get something going. And I'm like, listen, could you please turn off the TV?
Just if Chumley even doesn't get you going, nothing will.
It's probably one of the most like awful moments of my whole life, but I think maybe we're losing the script a little bit.
Yep, don't care.
Don't care.
Yeah, okay. I went when I was in college. Me and my buddy, we met these two girls at this party, and we went back to their place, and we decided to smoke some weed. And the recurring theme of my life is that I really can't smoke weed. Like, it just doesn't work. So I tried a bit of their weed and then got sensory overload. Like, I couldn't handle all of the sights and sounds and everything, so I vomited on their coffee table, and they kicked us out. And my buddy punched me in the face as soon as we got on the street.
After you did that, you should have just went, ta-da, and everything was
I have no idea what we're talking about anymore, man. I'm sorry.
Did it? I mean, I was just talking about how I've gotten more action than Neil Jameson on my worst day, so.
You burnt, Neil.
That's right.
I think for metal and all this ruining whatever, at the end of the day, if you don't like something, just wait a bit. It'll go away. It'll move to the background. Something else will come along. Maybe you'll like it. Probably you won't. It doesn't matter.
I mean, think of how many years before Sunbather came out, that Stick Stickley came out from Attack Attack.
Ooh.
Think how many, like, he makes no mention of that stuff. Can you guys honestly say that Def Heaven as a band is, I don't even want to say worse or even a little bit better. They're insanely better than some of the stuff that came out years and years before they rose to the stardom that they did.
We've gotten through Hollywood Undead, Blood on the Dance Floor,
Design the Skyline,
Stuck Mojo.
Yes, Stuck Mojo.
To be fair, we're still suffering under the dominion of Stuck Mojo.
we are still stuck with their mojo.
I mean, like before that, hair metal. So it's always been a thing. I guess what I'm trying to say here is that metal isn't going to die, but you will.
I think that's fair. Good. If we have not put a serious feeling of existential dread in our listeners by the end of tonight, we're not doing our jobs.
But, I mean, that's just the thing. Like, people age out of shit. They lose interest. They get old. They quit being connected to the same group of people that they were connected before. Things feel weird, things feel alien, and then suddenly, like, there's all of these strange kids you never saw before enjoying something that you don't necessarily like. And it's not metal being ruined, it's just you fucking dying.
My buddy just sent me the new album from Aether Realm, and this is related, I swear. So he sent the album, and he said, this is amazing, this is a really great album. And to a point, I agree, but I was listening to it, and it's that same sort of folk, like epic, triumphant battle music where guys wear furs on stage and there's lots of like chirpy, swirly riffs where they just, you could tell they're just maxing out the gain on their amps and they're just noodling away. And it's just this kind of shit that I just ate up, especially back in the day when I wrote for That Sound Metal, when I was huge into like Amon Amarth and all that Swedish shit. I should have loved this album, and I just didn't at all. I had no, it didn't even give me any sort of nostalgia. I had completely grown past this stuff. And we've been friends this whole time, and I mean, like, this guy has just been in on this stuff, and he loves it. And it's the same thing when guys listen to, like, Metallica, and they still love it. They'll still headbang to Master of Puppets, like that old man driving on some boulevard, just banging it out to For Whom the Bell Tolls, even though the bell definitely tolls for his wrinkled ass.
I believe the bell tolls for all of us. So, I don't know, man. Anything else you want to hit on here?
Well, what does Jordan have to say?
In general or about something specific?
Just in general.
The show could be real long.
Well, what do you think about the Paris Accord? No. So what do you think about, like, what's something that you used to just love? And you loved all the time, and you could listen to it all day and every day, and it's just not the case anymore. Like, what's a band or an album or something that you're just so completely over?
Oh, man, I'd have to think about that. Lost Prophets. No, I'm just kidding. you know, I've always been a big fan of Killswitch Engage. Like, from the beginning, the very first album, I've always loved them. And, like, well, I like the, you know, the new stuff they put out. I don't find myself listening to it all that often, and I just end up going back to, you know, the first three albums. And even when you could put other bands that sound similar or, you know, played around with them at the same time, I'll listen to that and just be like, nah, no thanks. I'll just go back to Alive or Just Breathing. So I'm in the same boat as probably a lot of other people that are listening right now.
You know, it's funny. When I was in high school, I was like super elitist. Like I thought, because back when you're in high school and you're a fucking 15-year-old kid, that's when this shit is appropriate. Not when you're fucking Brett Stevens at the age of 49. Yeah, I was a super huge elitist, like denim jacket, all the worst. So I knew I wasn't supposed to like a certain kind of metal, and Killswitch Engage and As I Lay Dying, those bands were definitely those bands back then. But I would honestly like put their music on blank CDs that I did not write anything on, and I would just fucking keep the volume down on the back of the bus, and I would listen to that shit because I loved it. I actually liked it, and I couldn't be adult enough to just admit it and like what I like. Because like right
that
now
that is incredible. I love that.
And it's like right now, dude, I like Def Heaven. I like them just fine. They're a good band. They have great composition. They're awesome on stage. They've really done something that is unique. It's their own sound. We can say things like, oh, they ripped off Alcest. They weren't the first black gays band. But if David Hall makes any point that makes sense in this whole stupid article, it's that Def Heaven really defined black gays as what it is, and now Def Heaven are the guys that people are kind of knocking off to, or not knocking off, but getting inspired by to make their own music. And it's just for anybody to say like, oh, well, this is commercialized. This is black metal gone cheap. This is how black metal ends. It's just dumb as shit. If people just put this shit past themselves and relax, they'd probably enjoy a lot more music that they're not allowing themselves to enjoy.
All right. Before we end it out, what are you guys individually doing to ruin metal?
I'm writing for Toilet of Hell, so
God,
that's my answer.
God damn it. Owned again.
Let's see. I got a job.
No, that's pretty weak.
I'm nice to my cat. I like to, sometimes when my wife is watching TV, it's America's Next Top Model, and I'm just, you know, there for that, and that's okay with me. And, you know, sometimes, like, I'll hold a door open for an old lady or something, and she'll say thank you, and I'll say you're welcome. I cook, too. It's pretty bad. Mm. I drink Dos Equis.
This sounds like your Plenty of Fish profile, actually.
That's right. It's still up. If you guys want to hit me up sometime, we can go grab some Dos Equis.
Oh, yeah. I refuse to go see shows that start later than 11.
Because you're ruining metal. You're really doing it.
Yeah. I don't support my scene.
Good. Let it die.
Yeah. Fuck your scene. That's a conversation for another day, I think.
No, it's not.
You know what? We should probably just stack this on the back half of the Municipal Waste interview.
Just far end.
I don't know, man. I don't really have anything else. I could tell you some funny stories, but I got nothing for today.
You got nothing? Give me I guess the coffee table incident is pretty funny.
I mean, like, that's not the only time I've puked on a woman's things because I was smoking weed.
Dang. Go on.
Yeah. I have two other times that actually happened. But, you know, we'll save them for another episode.
Leave the people wanting more.
give the people what they want. Yeah, we'll call it a bonus episode, the Joe Thrash and Kill puke incidences.
Yeah, that could be a very long show indeed. But I think we should call it here for today. You guys, give me the last words.
Those are them.
Jordan?
You said it all. Absolute silence.
Be sure to like and rate and I don't know. Actually, just listening to the show is enough. I'm sorry. I probably owe you all a dollar now. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.